Hello, this is John Hennigan of the Dunwoody City Council. I have two very good friends running for mayor, and I do not want there to be an appearance that I am supporting one over the other. Therefore, in fairness, I posted an interview that Mike Davis did last week, and I wanted to give Denny Shortle an opportunity to answer a few questions today. Denny is a founding member of the Dunwoody City Council and was chosen by his peers to be the mayor pro tem, or acting mayor, in the absence of the sitting mayor during his tenure. He has served this country with distinction, and it has been my pleasure to serve alongside him these 7 years on the Dunwoody City Council. Good morning, Denny.
Good morning, John. It's good to be with you this morning.
Denny, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'll give you a little bit about my background. You know, I'm originally from a small town in Missouri. Grew up on a farm. I went to the University of Missouri. Graduated from there. Spent 32 years in the Marine Corps. I'm married to my wife, Mary, for over 45 years, 47 to be exact. And we have three children, four grandchildren. I'm a member of the St. Jude Parish and All Saints Knights of Columbus. And I was the co-chairman of the group that pushed the cityhood vote back in 2008. And that's basically a quick synopsis of my background.
All right. What do you think you will bring to the mayor position?
Well, I will bring to the mayor position is open and positive leadership for the city council and all the citizens of Dunwoody. And with that, bring a attitude that will create a mutual respect amongst all of us. All of this using one thing that I think is critical in life called common sense. My thrust will be to bring us all together as one community that acts for the betterment of to enhance the lives of all of us. And I think just keeping in mind that all of our decisions should always be made for what is the best decision for all of us as a whole, not for any one individual.
Okay. So what is your vision for the city of Dunwoody?
Well, my vision for the city of Dunwoody is quite easy, and I've said this since we were pushing for cityhood. It's Walt Disney World. and people will, it brings a smile to people's face, but why? The why is that it's friendly, it's clean, it's fun, it's safe, and everybody wants to be there. And I think that's the reason I say that. You know, it's a simplification at best, but, you know, that is my overall vision of what Dunwoody should be.
Okay, well, it's going to take financial resources to make Disney World. It doesn't happen overnight. Give us your fiscal policy. How is that going to work? How are you going to make Dunwoody to be the best that it can be?
Well, fiscal policy is critical, and everybody fairly well knows that I'm a very fiscally prudent individual. Having said that, I also am a person that likes nice things. So that means, basically, that if I have the money, I'm okay to spend it. If I don't, I don't. I do not like debt. I do not like personal debt, nor do I like debt for the citizens of the city. And, you know, I think the aspect of fiscal policy is so important, because once your fiscal house is not in order, everything else starts to deteriorate. Once that happens, you know, if you ever have to, i.e. if you can't give your employees a raise, i.e. if you have to lay off employees, morale goes down in your workforce. If you can't fix the infrastructure, you know, the citizens, which the citizens expect and deserve, then that situation deteriorates us as a whole. And I think I can best bring my fiscal policy around is, you know, when we started the city, we were a public-private partnership. And while we were running for offices and everything, we had another groups that were out there doing various jobs. And one of them was to find a public-private partner to do our act as our, if you will, our vendor. And of course, we use the same same program that Sandy Springs, Johns Creek, and Milton had before of us. We put it out as one big package, and we only got one bid. And that bid was well in excess of what we could afford. And I just said it won't work. And didn't come in with the idea myself, but I got the idea from others that I knew outside the city. And we came up with the multi-vendor system that saved us $3.1 million a year. So I think in the fiscal area, you got to be able to think out of the box.
Yeah, I remember those initial days in the city where we were looking at different ways to run the administration. And I do remember that vote. It was an interesting times in the city of Dunwoody when we decided to just go out with one, to stay away from the one master vendor that would cut the overhead. So yeah. I remember that very well.
Well, you're exactly right. And you know, I can tell you when we did that, there were some, you're talking about it being only 7 weeks from going live as a city. There were some people that called me and said that, you know, they weren't too sure that I had it all together in my brain.
I remember those phone calls. I got a lot of the same ones, trust me. I don't think we've talked, but I'm sure I got the same pressure you did to vote certain ways. It's interesting looking back.
But we came up with a system, and we did it. And, you know, if that's the way we have to look at every situation. You know, and like I said, I didn't create that system.
Right.
I went out and I knew people that helped us, and they came up, and the three of us sat down and basically came up with it, and it worked. And yeah, were there some moments that I thought, "Whoa, yes," but you know what? You got to think out of the box, and you got to be creative.
So the city of Dunwoody has pretty much one of the lowest tax rates in the metro area. If I looked at my tax bill, I'm guessing my tax bill for my house this year would be about $250. I think we're being relatively conservative on everything we do. We are maximizing what we do, how we do it. And again, every member of the Dunwoody City Council for the last 7 years should be thanked. And so thank you for everything you've done. And I guess I've had a hand in it as well.
You have.
But anyway, tell me what you're thinking on taxes.
Well, you know, the number two reason that the citizens said they wanted to become a city was low taxes. And, you know, keep our taxes down. And we have not raised, as you just said, we have a 2.74 millage rate, which I think is the third or fourth lowest of any city in the metropolitan area. And you're right. I think the average tax bill for the average home in Dunwoody is around $250 to $270. And the thing about it is I think that's a good tax rate, and I think, you know, until we get our infrastructure up and running, I think that's where that tax rate should stay. At such time when we get our infrastructure, we get ahead of the curve on our infrastructure enhancements, then I think we can take a look at lowering that tax rate. But we have a large liability of our infrastructure. You can see it in the paving. And, you know, if your street's been paved, I'm sure you're very happy and you just soon get your tax rate lowered. But the majority of folks have not had their street paved yet. So until we get that done and various other infrastructure projects, I think we're very good. We've got a very nice low tax rate. And the other thing about it is, along with your help, John, and others, we were successful in creating a system where we have what I like to call a rainy day fund. You call it reserve, whatever you want to call it. But we now have a four-month operational reserve that stays. That's a low limit, so it doesn't go below that. And I think that's I'm comfortable with that, and I think that's something we have to do. And it's just like every individual, every citizen in the city does. They keep that rainy day fund because we all know it's going to come.
You said the number two reason was taxes. The number one, if I remember correctly, was actually zoning and land use. And we've put many different protections into place. We've had zoning reworkings of our code. What would you want to do differently? What haven't we done? What do we still need to do? What's your opinion?
Well, I think one of the things we need to do is we've got master plans that have been created with input from the citizens. And I think we've got to keep the master plans for the various areas in mind as we go forth. You know, we have very little land that can be developed, but I think there is some, and it's being developed. And the one thing we need to do is to make sure that we have quality developments and have quality contractors coming in and developers doing the work, because, you know, that we owe that to our citizens without a doubt. You know, the Dunwoody Village Parkway, that was an example. You know, the townhomes there, you know, they did not comply with the master plan of the Dunwoody Village. And the master plan said that not all, but some had to be earmarked towards senior citizens, empty nesters, etc. And, you know, the developer said he was not going to comply with putting what I think are necessities like master bedroom, bathroom, and a kitchen on the first floor. And the other thing he didn't comply with was green space. You know, the master plan says if you got more than a three-acre development, you should have a green space. And I mean, you know, a green space that you can actually use, not just a patch of grass.
Right.
And so I think the whole idea is to continue to move forward, because zoning is so critical to the citizens. That was the number one reason. You hit it. You were right on the nose. Some 70% of the people said zoning was their number one reason. And I think the other thing we need, you know, is embellishing, if you will, the townhome situation. We need high-end, quality, owner-occupied townhomes that are geared towards our citizens that are, if you will, some of them have to be geared, not all of them, be towards senior citizens and empty nesters, etc., because in the comprehensive land use plan, it states in there that we would like to have a situation where our citizens can age in place. Well, you have to have a place to age in if you're going to age in place. And right now, we are short of that. So,
right. So having the right zoning in the right place is important. And as you say, we have limited space. There's only 13 square miles. The city of Dunwoody will not be growing. There's no open land to clear cut and put in new houses. I think that very last portion of Dunwoody, that's just being developed now over there off Vermac. Mm-hmm. But as far as infrastructure, I mean, we're trying to do what we can, not only the zoning, but the infrastructure that we have. We can't put in a whole lot of new streets, though we're thinking about doing things here and there. Give me your thoughts on infrastructure improvements.
Well, you know, first of all, it's kind of a quick line, but the quick line is this: you know, fix the worst first. And when we were putting together the RFP for the vendors, we all knew that let's talk about our streets first. Our streets were in terrible condition. And, you know, to prevent the political aspects of whose road got paved first, and I got the idea from somebody else, I'll admit that straight up, the laser truck. And, you know, the laser truck does not have a human input. It is a device that goes over the road, and it rates every road. And as you know, that's right on our website. You can go in there and see what your rating is. And for the most part, we have stayed with that. Fixing the worst first. And I think that is very critical. The other thing we have to do in the infrastructure is to make sure that whoever is the successful bidder on our contract for us, that we ensure that they are doing quality work and they are doing it to the specs of the contract. I think that is so critical, because it's very critical that we spend every penny that we've got of the taxpayers' dollars in a very efficient manner.
No, I agree with you. We have contracts in place to do quality control. Every major project, they drill down, they check the pressure of the concrete, they check for gaps and all the rest. So, again, there's definitely quality control on most projects that we have. I agree. That's important.
It has to be that way, because, you know, and let's talk about paving a minute. You know, I know that's on the minds of all the citizens out there. And I get emails just like you, John, that Denny, when's my road going to get paved? And, you know, if your road hasn't been paved since we became a city, I can't argue with you at all. I agree with you. Your road needs paved. Mine does. I know that. Others do.
I was talking to a neighbor yesterday. Your road does need paving.
Yeah, I know. Some of the neighbors want me to move out. They think it'll get paved quicker. But I think the whole key of that is that, you know, we have to – we knew that before we became a city. We knew that the roads and the paving wasn't good. We knew it would take us a long time. We said that. And, you know, we said we wouldn't be paving for 2 years. We actually started paving our second year. And we didn't think we'd start paving until our third year. and we're moving forward on that. And I think eventually our goal is to get like a 20 to 25 year paving recycle plan. And just to put that in perspective, right now, DeKalb County in the state of Georgia has about a 50 year repaving plan. And the other thing we have to do on the paving is to ensure that we are maintaining after we pave. And I think there's new technologies out there, crack repair and things like that, that can elongate the life of a paved road, especially with asphalt. I worked on a paving crew when I was out of high school, and it's a hot job, I know that.
So do you think we should be going over and sealing those cracks before we start paving new streets? I'm trying to figure out, how would you do a little of both? I mean, I guess...
I think you can do it at the same time. So what I'm saying is that, we have to put part of the funding for that to elongate the life of what we've already done, because right. We can't just wait 20 years and then all of a sudden go around and say, oh, let's do something about that now. I think when you talk about how we do that, it's a system of almost coexistence, if you will. There'll be new paving, and we'll be enhancing the old paving as we go along. Okay, and while we're talking about infrastructure, let's talk about intersections just for a second here. We've got intersections that need improvement, and as I see, the best way we can do to enhance traffic movement is to improve some of our intersections. The citizens of the city, as I read their minds, do not want our streets widened.
I agree.
So I think one of the things we can do is do the enhancements of our intersections. And the thing we have to do is keep mindful that we have to do these at a reasonable cost. And, we need intersection improvements that do what we need, and we don't need to go out and, I think, as I call it, create a spaghetti junction here in the city of Dunwoody. So what I'm saying is that we need to fix the intersections and fix them to do the basic movement of traffic, and that's it.
Would that include bike lanes? I mean, Denny, I agree, no street is going to be four-laned as far as I'm concerned in the city of Dunwoody if it's not already there. I mean, Mount Vernon going a four-lane road across, to me, would be detrimental to the people who live here.
Would that totally be detrimental. No way I'm going to be voting
so
for that.
So I'm with you in the sense of the intersection improvements. Yeah. And tell me a little bit about your thoughts on bike lanes and alternative transportation and sidewalks, complete streets. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I was fortunate enough to go to the complete streets class, and I got an education on that right after we started the city. And, we have a master plan for where bike lanes can go. And basically, a bike lane can go on a street in a complete streets plan. It's called the 20% rule. So as long as the cost doesn't increase by more than 20%, it's okay within the complete streets class that I took anyway. But I think we do have to look at transportation for everyone. We're a city for everybody, cars, bikes, walkers, and everything else. And I think as far as bike lanes are concerned, we have some plans or some put in some bike lanes. They're on the master plan, and I think they ought to go there. The other thing is that sidewalks, sidewalks on our major thoroughfares should be our goal. And I'm talking about sidewalks on both sides. We're going to put a sidewalk on the Mount Vernon, on the south side of Mount Vernon this year. It's partially in right now. And I think all that priority, we have a priority, and I think that is the priority we need to stick by on our sidewalk repair and replacement. And the other thing I'm glad that we have done is we've not only put in new sidewalks, but we went back and repaired some of the sidewalks that are in condition that is substandard.
Yeah, I saw there was a program just recently where they would go down. If you look at your sidewalks, you might see a part that was ground away. If there was a high point in the sidewalk, if it cracked, if one of your sidewalks lifted a little bit, we took a grinder all over the city. We walked the streets of all the sidewalks and ground anywhere where the sidewalk was uneven. And I just thought that was an awesome program that we put in place to maintain the sidewalks that we currently have and to get them up to par.
Well, without a doubt, because you know we have citizens of all ages, you know, and sidewalks that are uneven are more susceptible to our very young and our very old.
Well, let's switch over to recreational facilities. I mean, the city of Dunwoody's got 50,000 people. We have old and young alike. We only have a limited amount of park space, and you know, I think we're trying to do the best we can with the facilities we have. When we started the city, we looked at who was providing the services, and all of our churches and other nonprofits were, and the JCC, they were all providing services to our community as though they were the parks department. And if we were to start a certain program, it would take away from some of the activities that they currently have. That being said, we should still be trying to serve all of our citizens equally. Are we doing a good job with that?
You know, overall, I think we've done a very good job since we, of course, we didn't have the parks at first. You know, I was on the negotiating committee, was negotiating with DeKalb County to buy the parks. And then finally, we've got it through the State House and Senate, and the governor signed it that we could buy them at the same basic rate, if you will, that Sandy Springs got through in Fulton County. And I think that was a great enhancement. But, you know, we got about 167 acres of parks, I think, all total. And like you just said, John, there's not a whole lot of open space out there that, you know, is going to be able to be available for parks. Also, the cost of land here is extremely expensive. So, you know, just to go out and buy land is, let's just say it's extremely expensive. Let's just take State Farm over there. They paid $4 million an acre for some of their land. But I think we need recreational facilities for a cross-section of our citizenry. In other words, we need recreational facilities for little people and kind of middle-sized people and taller young folks. And we need recreational facilities for our adults, for young adults, middle-aged adults, and senior adults. So we need to take a look at that spectrum across the entire thing. We've done some good enhancements. We've done some very good enhancements for, you know, our younger citizens, if you will. And we've protected them in the sun, if you will, by putting shades over them. I think those parks are well used. I go by them all the time. We just did some work over in Dunwoody Park, which I live right next to, as you know. And I'll tell you, the young folks are just happier as can be using that park. So what do we do and go forth? Well, you know, number one, I think we have a parks plan. I think the parks plan was a little bit of a pie in the sky parks plan that we approved 5 years ago, but that's, we approved it. So I think we need to look at the parks plan we have, and I believe that we have a lot of smart citizens that would like to be on that plan, to develop that plan, and maybe we need to hire one advisor to kind of keep them within the legal boundaries of what you can do and can't do. But I don't think we need to go out and hire a big consulting firm and spend a lot of money on a parks plan.
Now, so you've been talking to citizens about our parks and recreational activities, and we just received a settlement from DeKalb County for Brook Run Park in particular. In particular, as far as I'm concerned, that's the way the bond was written, that's what we sued about, and for the most part, that was the money that was directed towards that. I'm not sure if you're in agreement or not, but that's the way I read it. Looking at Brook Run Park, we have some opportunities there. We have 40 acres, or pretty much 40 acres, of open space in the far back. What is either your vision, or what are you hearing from the citizens about what you think we should be doing in the back 40 acres of Brook Run? Because I think that is the, we can put a lot of stuff in the plan, but right now we have a little bit of money for Brook Run Park in particular, and we have open space. What are your thoughts, or what are you hearing?
Okay, yeah, basically, you know, the... We have $4 million of all, 3.5 is for capital, and like $500,000 is for a parks plan, which I think
it's not going to, we're not going to spend that much.
No, it can be used for construction or whatever. But you know, the one thing I just want to ensure is, you know, being a public servant, you know, the whole idea is you tell the people what you're going to do, and then you do it. And, you know, we've been telling the people ever since we've been involved in the lawsuit for the Brook Run bond issue that that money would be spent in Brook Run.
Right.
And I understand legally maybe it now doesn't have to, but, you know, I think morally and everything else, we are committed to the citizens of the city to spend that money in Brook Run Park. Now, where it goes and how it divides up, you know, I think originally there was some ideas to make Brook Run just a passive park. Well, we don't have that much land to make it just a passive park, in my estimation. I think it can be a combination. So I think, you know, the area up there you're talking about in the back, where the hospital itself sat.
Right.
You know, I think we've got room there for a couple of fields. I think they can be, you know, multi-purpose fields, i.e. soccer, lacrosse, things in that nature. We've got two baseball fields over here on the other side of town, which we have done extensive work on the last 3 or 4 years that are really kind of come up to snuff. And I, as far as quality is concerned, and I'm very happy with that. But over there, I think we do need a couple fields for, you know, for soccer, I don't know how many we can put in there, maybe two, maybe three, and probably two, I would imagine. There might be room for three.
Right. There's something here. On Monday's city council meeting, we have an agreement coming before us that I was very proud to help push. That was the fact that we should have a sharing agreement with Peachtree Charter Middle School, who has fields available. They have the big football field. They have another flat field that they play soccer on. They have softball, baseball fields. And there's an agreement that the city of Dunwoody could maintain those fields, and then after hours, the city could put some programming into those fields. So that opens up, you know, the opportunity of fields, though it's not legally in our space.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You know, we started that. I think you and I were probably in the first meeting with the principal over there, and we offered them, you know, you can use Brook Run Park for your classes. You know, you got open outside classes, etc. And at that time, it was a shared cost. They were going to share, the school system was going to share the cost of, if you will, enhancing those fields. And that's the way you got to think out of the box. That's what I call thinking out of the box and coming up with a solution. So that will greatly enhance our facilities. But then we still need a couple of fields in Brook Run Park, I think, John.
Yeah, I hear you.
So that's, you know, whether they become daylight only or something, I don't know. That we have to talk to the local citizens around there and make sure they have an input, because I think input of citizens is extremely important. So that's, you know, and I think, you know, I'll talk about the theater. You know, I've seen what people have said to me about the theater and what they've said, I've said, but I think it might have been misquoted a few times. But, you know, I don't know if the theater is feasible to be enhanced or to be, if you will, be remodeled either physically or financially. I don't know that. And you know, if it is, then I think that is a place where we could put some of that money.
Right.
Some of that money. And whatever that portion is, I don't know. But anything you do in the theater is going to have to be a public-private partnership where the private sector has the majority of the funding. And that's where we can go forth. And, you know, the theater can be used for all kinds of things. You know, of course, stage door player comes to mind. I've actually given a talk in that theater, and you were in the audience when I gave that talk on Memorial Day here a few years ago. I can't remember the actual year. And I know it's deteriorated since then, which is, you know, that probably falls on all of us. But how that comes out, I don't know. But, you know, I do know that if we could do that with a public-private partnership, it would be an enhancement to the city. Because it brings together, like everything else you and I have been talking about today, the thing that we're all interested in, quality of life. Well, quality of life for our citizens.
Denny, you're on point for quality of life. The problem is that there's limited budget. There's limited budget for everything we do. And if you want to live in Disney World, how do you, you know, that was your statement, you wanted to be a lot like that. And, hey, I think it's an awesome goal. I want to be one of the best cities in the United States by far. But we also need then, we're not surrounded by Disney World all over. We need a police force that's going to adequately protect us. Mm-hmm. Currently, our crime rate has risen. We have 50,000 people who live here, but 100,000 people visit us during the day. We have a mall. We have shoplifting happening. We have, you know, an interstate running right through our town, and crime is up. And the police chief has come to us and asked for a few more officers and another detective, and that's going to be voted on here at budget time. Where are we as far as you're concerned with our police protection? Do we have an adequate police force?
Well, you know, the police force has two functions, in my estimation. Number one, protection of the citizens. Number two, peace of mind for the citizens. They go hand in hand. And those are the two functions of the police force here in our city or in any other city, as far as I'm concerned. I think, you know, the one thing that we need are, as I call it, boots on the ground. That means patrol officers. And I think we have to take a very hard look at, you know, overhead in the police department. And what I mean is, in other words, senior officers who aren't actually out on the street. I would like to see, even if we have senior officers, and we do have two new majors this year, we created the major position. And I think, in my estimation, they should be spending some time at the desk. I know that, but they should also be spending some time out there. Our citizens, I knock on doors, you know that, they're happy with our police force. They're happy with our police force. You know, the majority of the crime does not come from, you know, if you will, the single-family residential areas.
Right.
A lot of it comes from our apartment areas, which we need to protect, and a lot of it comes from, like you said, the mall. And, you know, I think we need to probably have a cooperative program with the folks in the mall. I know a friend of mine, he was a Marine too, and he retired, and he is now the security guy, head of security for a large major department store in the Chicago area. And I think, you know, internal security has to be tightened up as well. We arrest shoplifters, and it seems like in another couple of weeks they're back on the streets. So I think maybe a little stiffer punishment for some of these folks and a tighter security system. I think we have to use our stores have to use the best technology there is out there.
Well, so that's the problem, though. They use great technology, and what happens is that we can now see everything they do. And we have stores that will, you know, publicize or will press charges against every shoplifter. If you steal a toothbrush, you're going to jail. And
that's the way it should be.
And our Dunwoody Police Department uses social media. If you're on the internet and you don't know that we arrest shoplifters here in Dunwoody, you must not use the internet very well, because I think the whole city of Dunwoody knows that you should not be shoplifting, because you will be going to jail.
That's the other thing, difference with crime rates. You know, we started out, if you remember, John, we first started out and we just became a city. Our crime rate went way up because, you know why? People didn't report them before.
Right.
And now everybody reports them.
All right. This is moving along nicely. We have one more topic I want to cover, and that's schools. I have children in DeKalb public school system. I've gone through, you know, numerous schools here. I've been, if I had to think, about four or five different public schools that my children have gone to. From DES to Chestnut to Peachtree Middle to just numerous schools. And I think the teachers do a wonderful job. My children, some of them have flourished and done wonderful here. And I think that we need to look at forming our own school system, if for no other reason is the fact that 70% of my tax bill goes to the DeKalb County school system. We started the city of Dunwoody. We took what money we gave to the county for city services, and we've done it what I consider better here. But we've controlled the money. We've done it. I think we can do the same for schools. And what are your thoughts?
Well, I not only think we can do it for the same for schools, I know we can.
Right.
Taking over our schools is my number one priority. I mean, I make no bones about it. You know, educating our children should not only be our goal, it is our responsibility that we educate our children. And not only just educate, you know, let's talk about high school, educate our children that are going to go to college, but how about our students that can't or won't go to college for any reason? They need a trade. And I think so we have to make sure that we're going to educate everybody across the spectrum. I'll give you a quick example. I went to Altoona High School, and I spoke to six classes. I was invited up in May this year, and the first four classes were AP courses. And, of course, I mean, these students were very bright. Altoona High School is up in Eckworth. It's only an eight-year-old school, a beautiful building. And I finally asked the young man who was taking me around, by the way, who is the valedictorian senior class with a 4.54 grade average, and I jokingly told him it was slightly above my high school grade average. Do you have anything that you, for the students that aren't going to go to college, how about a trade? And he says, we have shop. And went back there, and the class was in session. The instructor came out, and a few of the students came out, and they had built a scale model of a home, if you will. And they roughed it out. They had the subfloor in. They had the studs on the side. They had the joists on the top, and it was about maybe 12 by 15. They took it down to some high school contest where they have various contests. And the long story short, the lead on the project was a senior, and he was offered a job as a carpenter that day from a major construction company here in Atlanta.
That's great.
You know, we need tradesmen.
Absolutely.
Of all kinds, and everybody isn't suited to go to college. I went to college. I was a carpenter before that and everything, and I went to college, and it's the greatest thing probably that ever happened to me. But some folks aren't. So we need to have people that are coming out of high school that can walk into the job place and be productive. And, you know, this taking over our schools, is it going to be easy? No. But you know what? It's a goal that we've got, and it wasn't easy becoming a city either. Well, so, you know, we can do the same thing, and it's a win-win situation. It's a win for number one, without any doubt, it's a win for our students and our children. And that's the whole thing about it. And number two, it's a byproduct of it. Our property values are going to go up. You know, and like you said, if people say, you know, well, it's very expensive. How are you going to do that? It is expensive. And, you know, but we have the highest tax millage rate in the state of Georgia.
For schools, for education. DeKalb County has the highest. That is correct.
Clarification, thanks. And, you know, it's 23.9, right? 23.89 or 23.98 mils. I'm getting the last two numbers reversed there. But, you know, nobody else other than one other place is allowed to go above 20 mils. And, you know, the whole purpose, like you said, we have done well with what we've done with the tax rate we've got. And like you, 70% of my tax dollars, home tax dollars, go to the county for schools. So I think we could do that, and we could do it immensely good. And the other thing we've got here in this city is we've got parental involvement. And, you know, I hear this thing, and I read the paper where people say, well, you know, my child went to school here, and they didn't get an education. Well, you know, parental involvement is critical. You can't just pull up in front of the school and let Johnny or Susie out and then holler out at the teacher, make sure you teach my kid. Your child has to come to school prepared to learn and has to have help at home. And I think that's critical in the overall school process.
I agree, Denny, I totally agree with you, but we also have citizens here that work extremely long hours that don't have the educational background themselves, and sometimes they have a hard time being so involved. So I just hope that if the city of Dunwoody were to form its own school system, that they would be looking at the lower spectrum, like you said, the lower educational realms, the special education needs of the city.
You've got to allow for all students, students, and you know, the bright ones maybe like me, the not so bright ones. And you know, you talk about your parents. You know, my father had a high school education, my mother had a sixth grade education. So you know, and let me just tell you, when I went to school, in my house, you better have your homework done, or you weren't in good stead with my dad.
All right, so let's wrap this up. Thank you for coming today. Is there any closing statements?
I think I told you what I bring to the table, and the bottom line is, I've got a 7-year record of doing what I told the people I would do, and that's what I will do. And, I'm a leader that's led. I've led in high-stress situations. And I think one of the points is, other than my family, the Marine Corps has probably molded me more than anything in my life. And, they have ethos in the Marine Corps. You live by them, and also you die by them. And one of those is, authority is given, but respect is never given. And it's only earned by your actions. And that's what I will do. I will create that mutual respect amongst all of us, that everybody feels that they have a voice in the city.
Well, thank you for coming out today. I'm looking forward to learning what you and everybody else has to say regarding their candidacy for office. I know there's a number of forums coming up, and League of Women Voters and the AJC and other places where you can put your points forward. I look forward to reading all those, and thanks for coming out today.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Have a great day. Yep. Thanks.